Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Shamita Basu. The Black is Beautiful movement, which caught on in the 1960s, was aimed squarely at taking down white beauty norms and recontextualizing Black beauty. And in the decades since then, many other campaigns have emerged to challenge the narrative of there being a single, white, thin beauty standard. But how did we get to a place in Western culture where, despite the many efforts to broaden the definition of what is considered beautiful, so often beauty is still seen in comparison to whiteness? A new book out now traces the origins of some of the most persistent Western aesthetic ideals. The book is called Fearing the Black Body: The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia. And the author, Sabrina Strings, assistant professor of sociology at UC Irvine, is here with me now to talk about it. Hi, Sabrina. Welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me on.
Of course. Your book looks at how historically fatness became linked to blackness and how thinness not only became a beauty standard, but a moral one as well. And one of the origins of these ideas that you point to in your book is the invention of racial categorization at the end of the 17th century. Can you talk about that concept and why and how it started?
Sure. In the context of the Triangle slave trade, there started to be a greater impetus to try to make differentiations between Europeans and Africans. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, people might have felt just fine having these types of very clear distinctions that allowed Europeans to be free and then also in charge of Africans who were slave laborers. But over time, they felt the need to increase the number of rationales that they were using. And one of the things that took place was that in the tail end of the 17th century, race science was introduced as that mechanism, which suggested that there are fundamental distinctions between Europeans and Africans. By the late 18th century, which was the height of slavery and also the height of race making, the idea that Africans were not only darker skinned, but also more sensuous started to be popular. And by sensuous, what they're referring to was an interest in sex and food.
So why was it that the female body was so often upheld as a quote-unquote prime example of a particular race?
Yeah, this is a great question. And it goes back to the objectification of women, which has existed for thousands of years, actually, when we take a look at the work of Gerda Lerner in The Creation of Patriarchy. And so it was very common for Europeans to look at women's bodies as representations of a nation. And so it happened that Black women who were deemed to be overly sexual and overly avaricious came to represent African people. And the notion that they were avaricious and therefore fat meant that the representation of Black women was that they were constitutionally overweight.
Mm. The story of Sarche G. Sara Bartman is an incredibly sad one. Can you talk a little bit about her and how she came to be viewed as a model of these racist ideas about size and beauty?
Absolutely. So within the context of the slave trade and the race science that was suggesting that Black women were naturally fat and that this was, moreover, a problem, Sara Bartman, who was born in the late 18th century and was an entertainer in South Africa, which is where she's from, she would entertain soldiers in the infirmary with little dances and sometimes like striptease. And there happened to be a European traveler who saw her giving one of these shows and thought, wouldn't it be great if we could put her on display in Europe? Mm. The thing about Sarah to keep in mind is that many people had never seen an African woman before. Many people in Europe,
Yeah.
And so when this European saw her there at her home in South Africa and starts to think about what were the possibilities for her as an entertainment, he decided to purchase her from her then handler, because she was nevertheless a slave there in the colony at the Cape, and took her and put her on display in various parts of Europe, and particularly in London and Paris. And on the bills, she was labeled as a, quote, perfect specimen of Africanity because of the fact that she was deemed to be rather curvaceous, voluptuous, and some of the bills even suggested that she was 3 yards and 3/4 round. And it was these characterizations that really did fall in line with the race science that brought Europeans in droves to see the so-called Hottentot Venus, or the idealized representation of Black femininity.
Let's move toward the U.S. now. And can you talk a bit about the role that religion played in the U.S., particularly in the late 1700s and into the 1800s, that contributed to this conflation of thinness and moral goodness?
A lot of the reports coming out of the colonies that were suggesting that Africans were naturally sensuous were making their way into the American media. And oftentimes it was unfiltered. So there would be a simple republication of things that had long existed in European media. It just so happens that by the early 19th century in the United States, we were experiencing a religious revival, the Second Great Awakening. And some of the people who were intimately involved with that were also magazine publishers. So we think about Sarah Hale, who some people might know because she is the inventor of the nursery rhyme, Mary Had a Little Lamb. But she was also an editor for a very popular magazine called Godey's Ladies Book. And in this magazine, which was actually the number one magazine for women in the 19th century, she would describe fatness as being related to racial inferiority and also immorality. Because within the context of the Second Great Awakening, there was the notion that eating to excess was somehow counter to serving God.
This book is about deeply harmful, deeply ignorant ideas that were and are upheld for so long. I mean, did you come across anything in your research that pushed back and challenged these racist notions at the time or moved the needle in any way away from that kind of thinking?
That's a great question. And the thing about race science is that it carried the label science with it. And so it was very common for some of the most important intellectuals in European history and Western history, actually, writ large, to simply sign on to these ideals. Seeing pushback for race science that was existing outside of the African and African-American communities was quite rare. For the most part, people believed that it was a legitimate way of expressing differences that existed, supposedly naturally, amongst humanity.
I wanted to ask you about the role of these women's magazines. I mean, you mentioned Godey's, Harper's Bazaar has been around for such a long time. Have any of these women's magazines ever attempted to accept any kind of blame for their role in perpetuating these notions? I'm asking specifically because I'm thinking about how National Geographic magazine put out an issue on race last year, and it started with an apology letter from the editor-in-chief that was recognizing that the magazine had carried racist coverage for many decades. What kind of reckoning do you think we need in this instance, even as a start in the right direction for something like women's magazines?
This is a great question. And I think that in some respects, women's magazines are attempting, at the very least, or on the surface of it, to be more inclusive. So they're attempting to include more women of color. They're attempting to include more people of various body shapes and sizes and abilities. I don't think that they've gone far enough. And as to your first question as to whether or not there would be a reckoning and an apology, I don't think that many people who are in publishing contemporarily are aware of the fact that this is their history and their legacy. So much of the race science and the race talk that was common in the 19th and early 20th centuries has simply gone away. And so people don't recognize the fact that what we are reproducing when we uphold the slender ideal, when we uphold whiteness as a standard of beauty, are these very long-held notions that are rooted in 18th century race science.
You mentioned that the origins of these racist ideas hadn't really been fully written about before, and you were endeavoring to do so in this book. Why do you think that these ideas hadn't been explored at their origin point so much?
That's a very good question as well. And I'm not quite sure as to what might have been leading to that gap in the knowledge. But I will say this. When I started researching this project, I had so much pushback from a variety of different people at many different institutions. I had been told that this work.
What kind of pushback?
Well, originally, people were saying things like, this is not academic. This can't be known. Someone already did this, although they couldn't tell me who did it. And then after that, I started to be told things like, this work is dangerous. And people who were saying that were of the belief that suggesting that fatness is not bad and therefore should not be tamed or controlled or eradicated, was a detriment to the public health, that it was very important that we tell people that they should not be fat. It's only within the past 5 years that I've started to see a shift and that people are more receptive even to thinking about the kinds of association between weight and race that I'm exploring in the book.
My guest has been Sabrina Strings. Her new book is called Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia. It's available now. Sabrina, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Shamita Basu. We'll be right back after the news.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.